You're listening to Intellectual Erection,
a place where we talk about the naughty.
Just stimulate your
thinking. You're listening
to
Intellectual
Erection.
Intellectual Erection.
Передачу, где мы говорим о действиях, субъекте
секса.
Компания, мы говорим о
информации.
To stimulate your thinking. Welcome back to another episode of Intellectual Erection. I'm your host, Patrick. And today I'm rebroadcasting an episode I did about a year ago with Isla and Ruby.
I want to know what's going on in your life. I want to know what traffic was like. I want to know what's going on with your car. You know, I'm
not particularly interested in your wife and kids, but you can tell me pretty much anything else.
In this episode, Isla and Ruby talk about sex work at the intersections of race and physical disability, as well as asexuality. It's a timely episode, and I think it needs to be reheard again. I remastered the audio so it sounds a lot crisper than the first time around, and I'm in the works to be doing a catch-up episode with Isla, which may be coming out soon. Again, I am extending my platform out to BIPOC voices to be amplified, so if you are somebody who wants to have your voice amplified or know anybody, please reach out to me at intellectualerection@gmail.com, and I'm happy to do an interview or to broadcast something that you have pre-recorded, or if you have an existing podcast, I would love to rebroadcast one of your episodes to extend the visibility of your platform. And as always, listen, subscribe, review, and most of all, enjoy. I'm sitting here today with
Isla and Ruby.
Isla and Ruby. Awesome. I like there was a pause. You were both trying to give each other space to speak first. That's so cute. Awesome. So what is it that Isla and Ruby do?
Isla is a full-service sex worker in Toronto, and she works with an agency.
Ruby is also a full-service sex worker, and at the moment, she is independent.
All right, so this is going to be nice. We have two different takes on sex work. So one would be agency and then independent. So far, I've interviewed sex workers, so I think I've done both.
Yeah. I've done both. Independent is new for me.
Yeah. Okay. So would you recommend then that to start one way or the other?
I honestly would definitely recommend starting with an agency just because I think that they can give you some like good roots, some good places to grow, and they can teach you some things, which is important going into the industry. You definitely want to know what you're doing. but ultimately, I definitely think independent should be the goal. And I have like a little saying that I usually tell people, and she already knows what I'm going to say, but it's agencies are like politicians. Some of them are better than others, but none of them are good.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So then did you start with an agency?
Yes, Ruby? I did. Yeah.
And then you moved to independent?
Yeah, so then just recently.
Okay. So for you, Isla, you started with an agency.
Yeah.
And
so
you're still...
Originally, when I first started sex work as a whole, mm-hmm. I was just doing like camming and Snapchat and things like that, like good old chatterbait. And then I moved into sugar babying, and then I very easily found out what like independent work was. But I wasn't doing like full service on like a large scale at all. Mm-hmm. And then I met the lovely, wonderful Ruby, who was like, you're wonderful, and, you know, you can do this on a much broader scale in a much safer way. And then I started working with agencies, and I think it's much better when you're starting out because it's safer in the long run. Yeah.
When you're still learning, you know, even about your own boundaries, because your boundaries in your personal life and your boundaries in industry might not line up. It might not be the same. So it definitely does provide like a good, stable environment for beginners.
That's fair. And I think that I've heard this same sort of thing from other sex workers. Just because you want somebody to show you the ropes at first to mm-hmm. understand safety and boundaries and how you can protect yourself before going out there. Because there's not really a mentorship program, is there, for For full service sex work. Absolutely. There's no apprenticeship program, nothing.
No. That's why anytime I meet like someone who's new to the industry, I definitely try and mama bird.
Absolutely.
Mama bear that shit.
Yeah, like there was a new girl who started at our agency back when we were agency sisters. And she was like, I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do? And I was like, hey, actually, don't worry. I got you. This is what you should do. These are the things that you should be aware of, you know? And she till this day, she like asked me questions. That I think is the best part of working at an agency is depending on where you go, you can have a great community of other workers who are all there to help you and explain to you, you know, if you have questions, if something's happened, you always have somebody to go to.
You have a support network.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. So then I want to ask both of you how you both decided to become full-service sex workers.
For me, it was kind of an impulsive decision on my part. I mean, I have like a weird thing with the concept of virginity, but I technically lost my virginity doing sex work. I had only ever slept with women. I'd never had PIV sex before until I went on Seeking Arrangement. And I started because I had just lost my job. I had just lost my home. And I was really lost and I didn't know what to do. And, I mean, honestly, I'm glad I did it because it's helped me in so many ways.
So how old were you when you began?
I was 18.
You were 18, okay.
Yeah.
And you had not had penetrative sex with penises or men before.
Okay. No.
So does that speak to your sexuality or is that just
It does speak to my sexuality a little bit. I think there was a part of me that just never wanted to try, you know? Like I was kind of just content being only with women, not necessarily that I wasn't attracted to men. But then after that, That was definitely when men were even introduced into my dating pool. So
you developed a taste. It was an acquired taste.
It was an acquired taste, nice. Absolutely. And I still, you know, like when I'm on Tinder, I'm swiping like 90% women and about 10% men. So it does speak to my sexuality a bit. But I did acquire a taste for men. Just a touch. Just a little cherry on top.
Just a little side dish.
A little side dish for men. Exactly.
Your awesome. What about yourself, Ayla? How did you get involved?
I guess for me, when I was younger, I didn't really know that sex work even existed. I didn't know that this was a thing that women could do. Like I had no idea. And then I got engaged like a young fool. Okay, like a young fool would. She got engaged.
How old were you when you were engaged?
I think I was 18.
I was
18 when I got engaged. Yeah, I was living in the United States.
Ooh.
Good time.
To a man?
To a man, yes, to a man.
A man?
To a man.
Sort of.
He was like a high school sweetheart, and we got engaged, and that was really cool. And I was then thrown into the world of camming through Tumblr. And when that happened, I like told him that this was what I wanted to do, and it was wonderful, and he accepted it. And then I met Ruby, and meeting Ruby is truly what changed it for me, because she was like, you know, you're amazing and wonderful, and what you're doing seems to be working, but did you know that there's all of this waiting for you if you feel like you can handle it? And I was like, I feel like if I have the proper guidance, and I did all the research that, you know, I possibly could before I decided to do it, but Ruby definitely helped me. I like left my I just called off my wedding and became a full service sex worker, and my entire outlook on life changed, and everything around me became so much healthier. The relationships I had with people changed. I started to treat myself better, like as a whole. So yeah, that's how I started.
Liberation through sex work.
Absolutely.
Let's get t-shirts made.
I like that. I mean, honestly, that's absolutely what it was for me, because I mean, if I had never started to do sex work, I never would have left, you know, the very toxic environment that I was raised in.
Yeah.
And I never would have been able to find, like, come to the big city, because I'm a small town girl.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And coming to Toronto has been like the greatest liberation of my life, and I definitely would never have been able to do that without sex work.
That was definitely a big catalyst in my life too. Like I grew up in Ontario, of course, but I ended up moving to the United States super duper young, and living there I had no status. There was no way that I could work. And right. So I was leaving, like when I left the United States and moved back up here to Canada, I was like running away from an abusive situation with absolutely no history in working. I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do when I first moved back here. And sex work was truly the only thing that I had that made me money. You know, it was the only thing that I could do that was reliable for me at the time and accessible for me, especially with my mental health. Like, I couldn't... Having a vanilla job so hard. I worked. I had 3 jobs at one time at a point, and it was it was horrible. I was trying to pay like $700 in rent, and it was horrible. Yeah.
Millennialitis.
Yeah. And it's not feasible for me to do something like that. But sex work is accessible. I can choose what I want to do with my body, and I can choose like when my schedule is going to be. And so I think that freedom is what really pushed me into it.
So I like that I'm hearing more and more stories of this nature from sex workers. Now, I know it's not exclusively the case, and there's still people in sex work that are being abused and get into it with the wrong people for the wrong reasons and end up being traumatized or being in toxic environments. And that used to be actually, as you well know, the stereotype, right? And you probably still get a lot of that today. The John that tries to be your savior from this pathetic life that you've constructed for yourself and to dig you out of your toxicity. Yet, it's funny that in your relationships prior to becoming sex workers, you were in the toxic environment and you liberated yourselves by getting into sex work and defining what, you know, what work means for you, what sex means for you, what your bodies mean, your boundaries, consent rules.
Absolutely. I mean, John's with the savior complex is like, oh my gosh.
As I was talking.
We're both sitting here and we're like, we have so many, we could do the entire podcast on this. We can't go that deep, but I did have actually an encounter in like, my personal life with my rheumatologist, and I'm very honest with my doctors about what I do because I don't see the problem with that. Like, I think it's best if I'm honest, and you know, because I'm honest with my doctor, I'm able to get like reliable, frequent STI testing and stuff like that, you know, without feeling ashamed or embarrassed because my doctor knows what I do and he's happy that I'm coming to get it done all the time. You know, that's all he cares about. So my rheumatologist, I did tell her, and she had like an interesting savior complex about that. Like, I truly didn't know what to say when my rheumatologist reached across the table and said, "Honey, you're so much better than this." I was like, "I'm just here to get my bones checked." Like, I don't know, man.
Thanks, but no
thanks. Thanks, but no thanks. Yeah, no. I thought you had a degree in rheumatology, not psychiatry. No,
sex work. And, well, the problem is that a lot of people are just uninformed, and they exist off of old information, and they hear probably only the horror stories because that's what's hot to be publicized in the media, right? You don't want to hear about successful sex workers because it's in a legal gray area and nobody wants to promote it. Right? My friend Andrea Wareham wrote The Modern Whore. We were talking about that. And she is trying to push against that stereotype as well. And part of what this podcast is trying to do is the same thing, to try to make it visible and to bring a level of understanding to the general public or whoever listens that, you know what, it's not exactly always the case. And there's things that you need to know about sex workers, about their agency. And I don't mean the agency you work for. I mean your, you know, your freedom to choose what you want and how you want it done. And one of the episodes that's going to be coming out in the future, we're going to talk about kind of the do's and don'ts and etiquette with booking and teaching how to be a proper John. Yeah. Right?
I can't wait.
But today we're going to talk about some other things that I'm really interested in hearing both of your experience and views on. So the next thing I wanted to ask, and this is specifically for Isla, this question is, do you get treated any differently as a sex worker who is also a person of color? And the follow-up question to that is if anyone's tried to engage you in consensual or non-consensual race play and how you deal with that.
Yeah, so there's absolutely a difference in how I'm treated as a sex worker because, as like a woman of color, right? I think what the difference is I think what, like, for me anyways, is that because of like my skin tone, I'm very often not like the first pick. I don't know if that's fair to say. I don't know if it's like a fair thing to say, but that happens very often.
It's probably fair to say.
It's just I'm like a niche, is what I've been told. You know, I've been told before that I'm a niche. There's like a small group out there. You know, mm-hmm. there you're just not that kind of girl. Are things I've been told right. because of my race, and I definitely most of my clients I have because I'm fetishized by them. You know, I get, like, called every name in the book that you can imagine. Every chocolate, mm-hmm. every color of wood you could imagine. Okay. Every different kind of coffee uh-huh. you could think of with no cream and sugar. That's me. Okay. All right. And it's just what happens. And for me, I'm very desensitized to it. So I don't get very riled up anymore about it. And I kind of allow some of my clients to like say what they feel they need to say to like have the experience that they want to have, mm-hmm. but I'm very often not asked. There's like never consent. I've never ever been asked, is it okay if I call you this? Is it okay if I say this? That's never been given to me from a client ever. And there are definitely some names that I don't want to be called. Like anything that's like puts my non-person of color client in a status above me mm-hmm. or degrades me mm-hmm. is not okay. Right. And I've gotten many of those many times. And it's just what happens. Like, it's what happens. It's something that I have to face as a person of color in
right, so it's a reality that you have to live.
Yeah.
I think going back to where you started, it is fair what you're saying about not always being the first pick.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, is you're by default not the first pick because whiteness is still the standard of beauty in mm-hmm, exactly. North American society.
Yeah.
Right? And we see plenty of examples. There's plenty of critiques online mm-hmm. when it comes to skin color, hair style, hair type.
Absolutely.
Right? White people getting away with dreadlocks as being edgy, and then black people getting called dirty for the exact same hairstyle. Oh my gosh,
yeah. Right? I've had been so many times to me before in work, in my vanilla life. There's it, all the time, always, everywhere, to the point where for work, unless it's like summertime, I don't have my hair out. My natural hair is always underneath the wig, almost mm-hmm. always. And I do it for photo shoots, and I do it for like, everything. Because if I don't, then I know that I'll have less clients coming in.
Right.
And so it's not the standard of beauty. My hair is not standard of beauty. And so it is not what clients want to see. I will say I've had one, though, who came in and he was like, is that a wig? And I was like, yeah, of course. And he's like, can you take it off? I want to know what your natural hair looks like. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh, honey.
Of course, yeah. So
good. So I'm hearing that like your approximation to whiteness is what's marketable
mm-hmm.
for your line of work.
Yeah.
Or on the other hand, being fetishized completely is another way to niche your marketability.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, you taken as a person is not taken seriously or not. Yeah. In a complete way. It's always in piecemeal or in fucked up ways.
Yeah.
And this is something that I think people need to hear. I know there's people out there that don't want to hear politics and podcasts and things like that, but I don't see how things just can be apolitical anymore. So sorry to the people who listen and don't want to hear it. You probably shouldn't be listening then. Or you should be listening the hardest.
You should be listening.
Listening the fucking hardest. Okay. And my question for you, Ruby,
yes.
because you are a person with invisible disabilities, I wonder if that at all affects, or how that intersects, rather, with your sex work.
I think that my disability intersects with my my sex work in a lot of interesting ways. There is actually an amazing pro, because one part of my illness is that I am hypermobile, which means in like less fancy terms that I'm incredibly flexible and can do very fun and interesting things with my body, which is absolutely an amazing marketing tool. Like, for photo
shoots,
like, I have pictures of me, like, with my leg behind my head, doing the splits across a sofa with, like, my ankles on each arm of the chair, you know, things like that. And I'm not totally sure what it is inside men that get excited by that, because, I mean, yes, you can push my legs all the way back, but how long are we really going to stay like that, you know? Right. But it's that, so there's the pro in that way, but, you know, it also, a con of my illness is absolutely that I am in chronic pain all the time, which is definitely something that is damaging with my work. And because I have malabsorption issues, my D3 is low and I often get sick. I'm very prone to infection. Mm-hmm. So those two things often make it difficult for me to work. I am kind of bad for having to reschedule with clients for reasons like that, which can definitely, in a way, like, damage my reputation or whatever. But at the same time, I'm really, you know, I spent too much time being concerned about it. And at this point in my career, I definitely can't be concerned about it, because I know that the reason that I chose sex work is because it is accessible to me. And I definitely won't let any, you know, pressure from anybody, Johns or agencies or anything like that, make it no longer accessible to me, because then I kind of lose some of the purpose.
Right. When we came here today, before starting to record, you had like a laundry list of things, and I don't remember everything that you said as far as your invisible disabilities. So these things will affect basically your ability to work, because it can put you out of work for days, weeks, and whatnot if Absolutely. Your health's not up to par.
Yeah.
Are you transparent at all with your clients about any or some of your invisible disabilities? And how do you negotiate that sort of communication within yourself? How do you choose whether to be transparent or not?
I mean, most of the time, I definitely avoid clients knowing. I try to keep it, like, on the down low, because I definitely don't want, you know, there was a time where I did tell a client, you know, that I had bad knees or whatever, and he didn't want to book me again after that because he felt bad, you know? He was like, I don't want you to come see me because now I know you're in pain while you're doing this, you know? Which, I mean, is nice and understandable, but at the same time, I need to make a living, you know? And it doesn't really matter what I do. I mean, honestly, sitting behind a desk 9 to 5 would be much more painful for me. So, right. But, I mean, there have been clients that I have told, usually, like, long-time regulars. I had one client who was, like, a doctor, specifically like a spinal doctor, you know, and he noticed my scoliosis in my back and was asking me questions, you know, and gave me a back massage. And so I was open with him mm-hmm. about it all, because, I mean, first of all, he was a doctor, so he was going to understand all of my big medical words that I would be throwing at him. And he was empathetic.
Right. So when you feel safe and you can share those kind of vulnerable aspects of yourself,
yeah,
you feel like it's okay. But otherwise, Absolutely. Yeah, you don't want it to threaten your work even more
than exactly.
it already does.
Exactly.
That's fair. All right. So the next thing I wanted to ask is, and this is a question for both of you, is what do you enjoy the most and the least about sex work? And I think we talked a little bit about the agency and whatnot, but we can go into a little more detail.
You want me
to go first? Absolutely.
Okay.
Take it,
Isla. I want to start with my least favorite thing about sex work.
Okay.
Right? And I think my least favorite thing about sex work is how it makes you focus on your outward appearance. That's my least favorite thing. Because, you know, dealing with people in general, that's pretty every day, you know, being able to be a well-rounded person and being able to connect with people and be empathetic is perfect, right? That's easy work for me to do. I don't mind that at all. And the physical aspect of it is, again, that's not
hard on me, right? It's not too difficult for me to deal with. But the worst part is how it all makes you reflect on the outward part of you. You know, how do you look good enough? Do you act good enough? Do you talk well enough? Do you walk the walk? Like, you know, you feel like there are all these standards that you have to stick to in order to, like, be a sex worker.
Right, you have to be marketable, right? Because you're seen a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you feel that gaze a lot more than probably outside of your sex work.
And I think that's just the hardest part, because you have to remember that when you are providing things like fantasies and experiences for people, that you too are a person. And there's a different part of you that these people may not see. And you have to, maybe you want to show that to them, but you're scared to, because maybe it's not marketable. Maybe you singing in the shower isn't marketable, you know? But it's you. And it's sometimes it's hard to have parts of you that you feel like you can't show people.
Right. Does that also come along with your body image being compared to other sex workers?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are a lot of things that I do only for work. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't shave my armpits outside of work. I love to say that, like, that if any of my clients saw me out on the street, they probably wouldn't recognize me.
Yeah.
Because, like, most of the time, I haven't showered in a couple days. My armpits, super hairy. I probably have, like, the clothes from the bottom of my drawer because I've been putting off doing laundry so long. Like, I'm a human being outside of sex work, you know? So the beauty standard is absolutely, like,
insane.
Like, I spend more time like on my makeup before work than I do for anything else. And at the same time, I'm trying to make it look not too bold, but also sparkly, but also kind of natural, because I don't want them to think that I have a cake face, but I also don't want them to think I'm gross because I have pimples like a human does, you know? So that's definitely a con for sure.
I think that's my biggest con.
I agree with her. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you're putting on makeup, you're getting dressed, you're putting on a persona.
Yeah.
You have your stage name, so to speak, and to some degree...
We call them our superhero names.
That's awesome. To some degree, it's a performance, right?
Absolutely. Oh,
you're going to put on a performance.
Mm-hmm. But you're also connecting with these people. I don't want that to get lost in this,
right?
Is that at the same time that it's visually a performance, you are emotionally connecting with these people. You are investing your time into these people,
right?
You know? And that's like, that should never be lost in it.
And I guess that I would say that that's probably my pro, is the connections that I get to build with people. And especially, like, the more often that someone comes to see me, and not even necessarily more often, but more times someone comes to see me, you know, I will remember that person. I will, you know, start to become more comfortable with that person, more open with that person. And, you know, now I have clients who, like, I'll run to meet them and I have, like, my hair is in a mess and I'm wearing, like, my old jeans and whatever, and I'm, like, frantic and I'm like, I'm here now, whew, you know, like, so natural and so honestly me. And those are the kind of clients that definitely make it worth it.
Those are the clients that get the best of me.
Like, they get the best of me.
They get me. I'm laughing. You have all the jokes. You want to hear about what my cat did?
Right, exactly.
If you want, like, that's my pro, is when I get clients who I connect with and I'm seeing them all the time. They're coming to me and telling me about what their cat did.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the traffic on my way in. That's my pro.
Yeah.
At that point, we're friends.
We're
homies. I want to know what's going on in your life. I want to know what traffic was like. I want to know what's going on with your car. You know, I'm
not particularly interested in your wife and kids, but you can tell me pretty much anything else.
Right.
So the way I see it is that, I mean, performance isn't, for me at least, it's not necessarily this aspect of doing something that isn't you. I see it in the sense of performativity, in the same way that we perform our gender and we perform all these sorts of roles, either consciously or unconsciously. That is what's of interest to me. So there's, I'm hearing that there's aspects of your performativity that's genuine mm-hmm. or true to who you are outside of sex work, mm-hmm. and you intermingle that with your superhero selves
yes.
to be badasses and have fun.
Yeah, and I think that's like a great key to getting regulars too. I'm just going to slip that tip in there, is the more, you know, like open and honest you are with your clients, the more open and honest they will likely be in return, mm-hmm. you know, so, and then that's what keeps them coming back.
Absolutely.
Is getting regulars always a good thing?
No.
Yeah, I saw that coming.
No.
Because I feel
it's really dependent on the client.
But yeah. most of the time it is. Yeah. Most of the time it is. Like, I think I would rather have, like, a trail of regulars mm-hmm. That I see, like, the same, like, 10 clients or something every couple times a week. And I'd rather much rather do that than, like, see different people every single time. However, mm-hmm. there have been, and the reason that I said no is because I have personally had an experience with a regular who, you know, like, lost sight of the boundaries.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately I had to end that working relationship because, you know, he was comparing himself to my boyfriend. He was like, I don't understand why you don't love me the same way you love your boyfriend. And I was like,
whoa,
that's way too far. My boyfriend doesn't pay me, you know. Yeah. Like, there's already like a discrepancy in our relationship that you can't take away, you know. So that's why I said no anyway.
Yeah, it's the same like when clients fall in love with their therapist, right? Mm-hmm. You have somebody that listens to you, and then all of a sudden, wow, I feel so heard. And
exactly,
you know, you get too close, you get too vulnerable.
Exactly.
And yeah, that's what I was thinking, is maybe people take advantage of the fact that you become vulnerable with them and start to push the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But mm-hmm. luckily, I mean, most of the time it's pretty easy to shut those relationships down.
Yeah.
So not always, it's definitely not like a thing to rely on, you know, but oftentimes even when they get to that point, like with my bad ex regular, after I told him off, he kind of got the point, you know, and he actually didn't really pursue it after that because I made it very clear that I was no longer interested. Mm-hmm. And as long as, I mean, you're not letting these people know where you live and not letting them know like your real in name and information and stuff like that, then the consequences of cutting them off are usually quite minimal, you know. So I still think regulars are a good thing to work for.
So overall, they're mostly good.
Mostly good.
Mostly good.
Mostly good. 85%.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's very specific. Somewhere in your phone you have a chart.
Yeah. Keeping tabs on the wall.
Yeah. So the next thing I want to ask both of you is, what advice do you have for people thinking about getting into full-service sex work?
Research, research, research. Please, please reach out to other sex workers, respectfully and kindly, you know, respect their time, obviously. Don't just go wherever it will take you, okay? Do not go to, like, that one random guy who's like, hey, you want to try this? Like, don't do that. You know, make sure that if you're going to do indie work, that you're talking to, like, you have a community of women that you can go to and that you can ask them questions. You know, educate yourself on sexual health. Mm-hmm. That is so important. So important. Because I had a rather acute knowledge of sexual health before I started full service sex work. There was not much I knew. Like, until this day, I do stupid things, and everyone's like, you can't do that. And I'm like, it'd be good to know that before I, you know, mess up or like accidents happen, you know? So please do your research. Talk to girls.
One of my favorite little pieces of advice is that, so, I mean, the client should obviously shower when he gets there. Yeah. I don't care if he's like, we showered before we got here.
Shower
I don't
again.
Care. You were probably standing squished sardine with like 30 other people on the streetcar. So shower again, you know? but because they're showering again, what I love to do is I put a little cup of mouthwash on top of the towel so that they are forced to interact with the mouthwash. Right. Because other times, you know, it's like on the counter and it's there and it's visible. The cups are there. They know that it's there to use, but they just opt not to. Mm-hmm. You know, they think that, like, it's something that they are allowed to just, like, opt out of, which it's not. at least not for me personally. So I always suggest putting it under the towel so they're forced to interact with it, because they're either gonna pick it up and do what they're obviously being asked to do, or they're gonna be like an asshole and they're gonna put it to the side and I'm gonna see that, you know.
Or worse, put it down the drain.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't think about that one.
I can taste their breath.
Yeah. I can tell. I know if you come out and I can tell you haven't used a mouthwash, I will like look over your shoulder and be like, I see the full cup of mouthwash. I see the mouthwash leaking out the bottom of this paper cup. Okay, so I know you haven't used the mouthwash.
Here's what I just came up with on the spot. Cool little trick. Take it or leave it. Be like, kissing is extra. Unless you use the mouthwash, then it's free. Boom.
Wow, and it's a that's great.
Non-rude way of telling them.
That's great. Yeah, because especially like they like to try and save money wherever they can with some of the Johns. So they'd be like, absolutely.
How much extra? $100.
$100. Yeah.
There you go.
You see these lips.
Yeah. You want to pay $100 to kiss me, or do you want it for free with that motherfucking mouthwash?
Right? Mouthwash. Yeah.
Call me still a stream.
Exactly.
Yeah. What? Other tips? Do you have any other tips?
I mean, I think you covered it, but reiterating sexual health, I guess, definitely. Because I mean, I've even spoken to like other full service sex workers, you know, and it's definitely like not to shame or anything like that, but you know, there were girls who told me that they hadn't gotten tested in like 6+ months.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely like way, way too long of a period to be waiting if you're a full service sex worker to do sexual health testing.
Right.
Like knowing your status as a sex worker is really, really important. And it's also really important for the Johns too, because I saw a poll on Twitter and like when I saw the results, it was like 36% of Johns said they had never even been tested before. You know, so sexual health is super, never. 36% of Johns said they never not once been tested. Like,
shit.
So yes, reiterating sexual health, educating yourself on that is really, really important.
I remember one time navigating on a sex worker's website and actually seeing their test results posted, obviously with the name blacked out and all that, but you know, regular test results posted, and it was actually reassuring.
I posted mine on Twitter.
Yeah.
When I get mine, I post mine on Twitter because, I mean, I don't have a problem with sharing that information, you know, and I had, after I posted that on my Twitter, someone actually, you know, called the agency that I was working at the time, freaking out, saying that I gave them something. Like, I transferred an STI to them. And, I mean, I went and I got tested again, just to be sure, and it was still negative, you know, but even just the fact that they took that, you know, they saw that, and they were like, I can try and take advantage of that for some reason. Doesn't make sense.
That's stupid, because that's actually evidence.
It's like the evidence of the contrary, you know?
So where would somebody who's interested in getting into sex work find information, online or in person? Where do you meet other sex workers?
Twitter.
All right.
Twitter is great. If you live in Toronto, there's Maggie's.
Maggie's Toronto, yep.
Yeah, Maggie's Toronto. You can go in person and they have condoms, internal condoms, latex free condoms, lube. They have, you know,
workshops and resources.
Resources and like a bus that comes and does STI testing. I believe it's once every 2 weeks or something like
that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so Maggie's Toronto in person, you know. But definitely Twitter is usually a pretty reliable place, you know, just like hashtag date whatever city you're in or whatever city you're in, escort, and you'll start finding, you know, other full service sex workers in your area.
And also, I mean, there was the sex worker meetup at Oasis.
At Oasis, yeah.
That's where we met.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was so good.
I wanted to go, but
it was nice,
sick.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. another thing that's really great is FetLife. I don't know, like, I'm on FetLife, beautiful and wonderful. It's Cuddle Slut on FetLife with 2 U's in the slut.
dropping her at.
I'm dropping
her
at.
Add that shit.
It's really great. But you can use FetLife and you can type in different events. You can go see all the events in your area or in cities around you. And different sex workers do post when they have events on there. Oasis posts when they have events.
events on there. You can find other workers in the industry. You can just message them and be like, hi, I know that you're a worker and I would like to be. So could you tell me some things that I should be aware of?
Or direct me to somewhere that I can find resources.
So, yeah. Perfect. So FetLife is also great.
So when we met at the sex worker meetup,
yes,
you were talking a little bit about dissociating during sex,
yes,
which I found interesting. And I was wondering if you'd like to talk a little bit about it, how that happens and how it affects or how it intersects with your sex work.
Absolutely. So I find that sometimes with my clients, I dissociate. And it's never because my clients are pushing my boundaries. I'm very specific about what I do and do not like with my clients. I very rarely have people try to push my boundaries anymore because they know better at this point. So that's never really why it happens. But when we are being physical, I very often kind of just like fall away into whatever, you know, I'm thinking about everything else under the sun. But what it does is like my mind is off somewhere else and I'm not being traumatized. I'm not scared. None of those things are happening, right? I feel safe. I know I'm safe, but I'm just kind of like laying there is what ends up happening. I'm like out of my body. And I know that I feel like it's not fair when it happens with my clients because then I am not giving them my 100% in those like couple of seconds, you know, my face might be blank,
yeah,
or maybe I'm not being as exciting as I normally am. And that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Does it happen regularly?
Yeah, it happens pretty regularly. It happens at least like a couple of times a month with clients. So,
and do you still feel your body when you're like, do you feel what's happening to your body?
Oh, yeah.
When you're dissociating?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I know. I definitely know what's happening. Mm-hmm. I'm very aware, right? Yeah. So it's not like I'm not able to consent. I'm still very aware of what's happening. I'm okay with what is happening. It's just like when I'm on the bus and I'm just listening to music too long and then I start dissociating on the bus and then I miss my stop and then I have to like backtrack all the way. It just happens. And I tried when I was at the sex worker panel at Oasis, I was asking the other girls because I wanted to know if any of them had also gone through that. You know, what was it like for you guys as, you know, women with mental illness who are in this industry? Does it happen to you? What do you do to cope with it? And a lot of them are like, we just use grounding techniques. Like, yeah, it happens to us.
Mm-hmm.
We reiterate our boundaries and we use grounding techniques and this is how we try to go through it. And a lot of them suggested things like therapy and like other like meditation and yoga and things like that to do to like help ground you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, I think why I'm dissociating, because I spoke to Elizabeth Lord a bit about it as well. She's another wonderful indie worker who mm-hmm. is at the Allegra Collective. For the Lego Collective, she's wonderful. I'm asexual, right? So
that's in your profile, yeah. Asexual. So that was another follow up question. So we could talk about it now.
Oh, yeah, is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course.
I think it has something to do with my dissociating, right? Is that in my private life, I don't have sex ever. It just doesn't happen
ever.
Ever.
Okay.
Ever, except for like a small period of time when I was trying to like really convince myself that I wasn't asexual. So I was like going through like all these like raunchy hookups with a ton of people. And I was like trying to convince myself that that was what I liked and that's what I wanted. But prior to that, I went 10 months, like
nothing.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's what makes me dissociate, is that sex for me is like very purely a thing I do to connect with people through my job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is for me right now in my life. I think that's all it's going to be for me right now in my life. And I think that's what makes me dissociate. When I spoke to the other girls about it, they were like, we, us two as asexuals, experience that in our job. You know, it's not something that we do all the time. It's not something that we do casually. It's just what we do for work. And that means that sometimes you think about other things, like what you're going to do for your, like for groceries or like, you know, what you got to do when you get home. And so they're very reassuring.
Well, the way you describe it, it sounds like it wouldn't be uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of sounds like spacing out.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people can relate to that. I've definitely been there during sex and during different things, especially in my former vanilla relationships. I think most of my sex was was spacing out.
Yeah.
But with when it comes to asexuality for you, does that interfere or have any effect at all on your experience of pleasure?
No. I think one thing I like to tell people all the time when I tell them I'm asexual is that all my parts still work the same. So I feel everything. My body still gets stimulated. I get turned on. You know, I can orgasm. All those things happen because my body has nerves and parts that like to be touched. Right? But when it comes to the urge to have sex, that is what I like.
The desire.
Mm-hmm. I don't possess that. I don't have the desire to have sex.
And was it like that as well before sex work when you were engaged?
I was 16 when I came out of the closet as asexual. Okay. That was the first time I identified as asexual, and I was engaged with the boy, and then I got engaged. Yeah. So when that was happening, I had a lot of people tell me there was absolutely no way I could be asexual if I was having sex. They were like, asexuals, they don't have sex lives. You can't. And I was like, so I guess I'm not asexual then. Okay. And then when we broke up, I went through the slew of, like, you know, sleeping with tons and tons and tons and tons of people because I was like, I'm not asexual. This is what I'm supposed to do to, like, get over it and live my life and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I've been fed or whatever things I thought, you know. And then I kind of came to terms with the fact that I just don't want to. I just don't want to. Yeah.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah. I hope I wasn't like trailing off sometimes.
No. I was thinking about a bunch of things as you were saying that.
Yeah.
Probably thinking the most about what would be important for people to know about asexuality who don't know anything about it so that they don't make those kinds of judgments like, oh, you can't and you must, and all these prescriptive notions about what you're supposed to be like when in reality you have your own experiences that define you and what you do.
I think one thing that everybody should know about asexuals is that as an asexual, you can still have a sex life. Mm-hmm. You know, that can still exist. You may only have sex with your partners when your partner wants to have sex with you because you love them and that's how you connect with them. So you have sex with your partner. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do kink all the time with your partner and then, like, you know, have sex with your partner afterward because that's what your partner wants at the end of your session. They want to have sex. And for you, it can just be kink. That still makes you asexual. Mm-hmm. I think, like, the way that I define it anyway is that being asexual is just not possessing the desire to have sex. When the sex is not the goal for you, it's like not what gets you going, you know, it's not what you need to connect to that person. That's what I...
Yeah, I feel like that deserves another episode onto itself.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's interesting to hear it for the first time for me as well, because I've just only read about it. And I've never met somebody who identifies as asexual, so it's nice to hear. Now, Ruby, you've been waiting patiently.
Yes.
Is there anything that you have to add to this part of the conversation? If not, I can certainly direct something more specific to your experiences.
I definitely don't have experience with identifying as asexual. I mean, I do have experience of identifying as a lesbian for 4 years, mm-hmm. and then coming out as bisexual after that, which was definitely interesting, and it was hard. It was, I think, actually coming out as bisexual after coming out as a lesbian was harder for me than coming out as a lesbian in the first place, because in my mind it was like validating all the people who ever told me that I just needed to find a good man one day, or you know, I just never had good dick before, or whatever, you know. When I realized that I was in fact bisexual and not a lesbian, all that to me, I was like, they were all right, you know, but they weren't right, you know. I had my own reasons for identifying as a lesbian, and I had my own reasons, you know, for discovering that I was bisexual, you know. So that was definitely like, that's the closest thing I can really say to experience, but otherwise, I mean,
Yeah,
I'm fairly comfortable and definitely in my sexuality at this point in my life, which is good.
And I was wondering if also if you've had experiences of dissociation that relate to Isla's experiences.
I have, mostly when I was like a new full service sex worker and men, Johns, were pushing my boundaries and I didn't know how to respond to that. It was definitely like a coping mechanism, like in a, like a reaction that I couldn't control, you know, and that definitely didn't help because then it gave these men the impression that I was malleable, I guess, you know, easy to convince and to coerce into doing things that I wasn't actually comfortable with. So learning to not dissociate during work and not, you know, associate anything negative that may have happened to me with my work, it's been incredibly helpful. Yeah, but I don't really experience that much anymore because most of the time now when if a John is pushing my boundaries, I'm like, all right, and you can leave. Like, I really don't allow men, Johns, to disrespect my consent anymore, which is good. Unfortunately, it was something that I had to learn. But I've learned it now, definitely.
I was really lucky that, like, when I started, you were there. Because she taught me all those things. You know, yeah. She's the one who taught me, keep your boundaries. Don't let people push you. You know, don't take no shit kind of thing. Like, you know, she definitely...
I didn't want her to go through what I had to go through in order to learn those things. Right. You know, because I had to learn those things on my own.
Learn from my mistakes.
Yeah, from my mistakes, you know. And so I didn't want her to have to do that. I wanted to teach her so that she could stay safe from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, luckily I don't anymore.
I wonder, have either of you ever had a woman as a client?
I have a couple.
What? That's awesome.
Yeah, and yeah. So that's like the only woman that I've seen as a client, but
I mean, I guess I technically have.
Yeah.
I mean, only in couples. Only in couples. I've never.
Oh yeah, and that's another thing. Yeah, couples.
Yeah, I've never like had a one-on-one session with a woman.
Yeah, no.
But if any woman wants to please hit us up, I will give you a discounted rate. Okay, I will buy us dinner.
Yep.
And it's wine.
Dinner
and wine on me.
And the Uber back.
And the Uber back on me. Okay, I will treat you to a night of romance and sensuality.
There you go.
Girlfriend Ruby experience. Rose Gold on Twitter. Send me a DM.
Girlfriend experience.
Girlfriend experience, yeah. Absolutely.
Wouldn't it be nice to have a regular that's woman?
I know. I might fall in love with her.
Yeah, I think that'd be like...
Counter transference.
But yeah, only in couples. Which, I mean, it's usually pretty fun.
It's always fun.
Usually pretty fun. I have personally had an experience where the man in the relationship definitely seemed to be getting more gratification out of the couple plus worker situation than the girl in the relationship did, which definitely makes me feel bad, you know, right. And I want to do something to make her feel better. So I'm like, I'm just going to crawl away from you real quick. Make sure your girl's doing all right because you just left her laying there and she obviously looks a little sad, you know?
Yeah. So what's the future got in store for both of you? Do you want to do this forever, for the time being?
I don't have any plans. Like, I don't like have any plans to cease my behavior. I definitely could see myself doing it at least for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I plan on leaving Canada and going and traveling the world and working in some of the other countries in the world where I feel safe and comfortable to do so. Nice. Like Australia would be really fun. But I mean, I definitely don't have any plans to stop.
Yeah. I'm
pretty content.
I'm trying to be a doctor.
She wants.
So there's there's like no end in sight until the day I have PhD at the end of my name. Then you'll be satisfied.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It'd be awesome if you didn't stop.
She might want a Lamborghini, though.
I'm very blessed that I was able to tell my father what I do for work. So I have
no reason to stop. Like, I have none. I would totally buy a Lamborghini.
My family doesn't know what I do for work, but I still have no reason to stop.
It's been one of, like, the most transformative things I've done in my life. Which, again, I definitely did it. Like, I had a lot of privilege in how I was able to start in the industry. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But that, like, and because of that, it has been transformative for me. So, it's working. I love it. It's amazing. I get to meet some people and connect.
Work is real work.
Hashtag sex work is real work.
I was going to say hashtag blowjob better than no job. But also, hashtag sex work is real work. Hashtag sex work is hard work. Hashtag sex work is important work. Mm-hmm. It's valuable work.
It just reminds me of in Andrea's book that I mentioned earlier, Modern Whore. So she talks about her experiences escorting. There's a really nice, I'm paraphrasing now because I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something like, if you have a 9-to-5 job that you go to and, you know, you hate, you're still a hoe. You're a hoe to the state, so...
You're a hoe to the state.
I mean,
it's no difference. You're whoring yourself out for money either way.
Exactly. My hours can be 9-to-5. Like, it's all...
I don't get up that early.
You're better. Yeah, man.
It's not about the hours. It's more about the idea of dignity.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And absolutely. Yeah, no. I saw a comic by Jack the Stripper. Mm-hmm. That was very similar.
I've been following.
Yeah, she was very similar. I believe it was like, I don't remember what the vanilla job the other girl was working was, but then she was saying to the stripper, like, oh, how could you do that? Do you have no respect for yourself or whatever? And Jack, she's like, well, take a look at yourself.
And all the things that you do for a boss, for a company, for the state.
Are you happy doing it?
Yeah. That breaks down your identity, your dignity. Yeah, when you go home and cry after work because somebody's been cruel to you.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that was one of the biggest things for me that changed. Like, that made me never want to go back to vanilla work. Because I was working at Bath & Body Works, okay? It's not even, like, that competitive of a goddamn sales associate position, okay? And... I got, like, screamed at in the middle of, for anyone who has to work at Bath & Body Works, like, room one, okay? Right in front of the mall, there are children that are listening to my manager scream at me. And I started crying, like, right then and there, on the spot. Yeah. I was like, this isn't okay. You can't treat me like this. And I actually refused to be paid $8 an hour for you to treat me like this. And then I became an escort. And guess what? No one ever screams at me at all.
I scream at people.
There you go.
I scream at people. Exactly. People pay me to scream
boss.
At them.
I feel like I have much more dignity as a full service sex worker than I did when I worked at McDonald's. That's for sure. Because I've been there. Like, I've been through all the lowest of the low options. Okay, McDonald's being one of them, and it was absolutely horrendous. You are absolutely a slave to their system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the issue with vanilla work in general. Is that because people are given, like, put into these positions of power, right? They assume that that means that the respect that they give you is not basic human respect. You know, it's authoritative respect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It respects me as an authority, and I will maybe respect you as a basic human being.
Yeah.
It's not, they're not seeing people on an equal level.
Well, yeah, because the power relations are hierarchical.
Yeah, and it's I think that's why it's so easy for people to treat people in vanilla jobs any kind of way, especially if you work in any kind of human resources or any kind of sales, like anything that's face-to-face communications with another person, you know?
Meanwhile, in sex work, I mean, at least there are definitely, like, sex workers who are male or identify outside of the gender binary, you know? But for the most part, sex work is a matriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
This is true.
You know? Like, for me, it feels like I feel like the queen.
I feel like the queen.
As I should.
Awesome.
Right? My name ain't Princess for no reason. Damn it.
Awesome talking to both of you today.
Thank you
for coming. Yeah, that wraps up our wonderful hour. So I do I definitely have so many ideas for more episodes with yourselves, with sex workers, about so many things, you know, booking etiquette, how to the do's and don'ts of a session, all this kind of stuff. And I'd love to talk to both of you again. But for now, do some shameless plugging. Where can people find you if you want them to find you?
Twitter. You can find me on Twitter.
This is Isla talking.
Yes, this is Isla. My bad. At itty bitty Isla. All right. It's Isla the Island Princess. And on FetLife at Cuddle Slut. Two U's in the slut. Yeah, that's me.
It is now Ruby speaking again. Yeah. In case you, I don't know if our voices sound all that different. Guess we'll find out. But you can find me on Twitter at Ruby_RoseGold.
I'm also at Sassy Angels. Find me, come say hey.
Well, a lot of this stuff is going to be in the description of the video, so cool, look out for that, and you will have links to these wonderful humans.
Thank you.
See you again, thanks.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Intellectual Erection, a place where we talk about the naughty to stimulate your thinking.